From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Turkey recalled its ambassador from Germany Thursday, following a decision by the Bundestag to recognize the killings of about 1.5 million Armenians by Ottoman Turks a century ago as genocide. The German parliament approved the symbolic resolution Thursday. Historians estimate that up to 1.5 million Armenians were killed by the Turks during and after the First World War. Many scholars view these killings as the first genocide of the 20th century. Turkey denies that the killings were genocidal, saying that those who died were victims of civil war and unrest. Turkey also insists that the number of deaths has been inflated. More than 20 other nations, including France, have passed similar measures in past years. Those were also protested by Ankara. As the vote took place in Berlin, hundreds of Turks gathered outside the session in protest, waving Turkish flags and holding signs rejecting the accusation of genocide, saying that the issue should have been decided by a tribunal, not the German parliament. Meanwhile, a group of about 100 Armenians danced and sang in jubilation outside the Reichstag building in Berlin following the decision to pass the bill. The parliamentary seat, usually filled by Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel, was left empty for Thursday's vote on the measure. More protests in Brazil against what demonstrators called an illegal coup that saw President Dilma Rousseff suspended from office last month after the country's Senate voted to begin impeachment proceedings against her. RT's Ignacio Ubilla filed this report from one such protest in Sao Paulo late Wednesday.
Huge crowds of supporters of suspended Dilma Rousseff are out on the streets. They are voicing the rejection of the impeachment process against Rousseff. And the rally is called Out with Temer because they are calling for the removal of the interim president, Michel Temer.
Fora Temer! Fora Temer! Fora Temer! Fora Temer!
Here today, demonstrators are also protesting for Temer shutting down social programs. And we have to say that these people here, for them, they are fighting the coup. That's exactly how they see Rousseff's controversial impeachment. The country is being rocked by rival rallies, both for and against Rousseff.
Meanwhile, lawyers for Brazil's suspended president presented the defense for her impeachment trial to the Brazilian Senate late Wednesday. The defense brief cites recently leaked recordings of high-level officials from the right-wing opposition, including many inside the government of interim president Michel Temer, discussing the need to impeach her to evade corruption investigations. The defense introduced the recordings as evidence that the impeachment bid is a, quote, misuse of power, close quote, and an act of political revenge against Rousseff. The recordings have implicated key right-wing figures in the impeachment effort against the Workers' Party president, including two members of interim President Temer's cabinet and the head of the Senate, in a plot to halt ongoing corruption investigations. The first tape, released last week, showed interim planning minister Romero Yuca, who was also head of Temer's PMDB party, conspiring with the Supreme Court and military commanders to guarantee Rousseff's removal and to end the car wash investigations. In a second leak, Senate Chief Renan Calheiros was caught planning to hold discussions with the Supreme Court to change key laws directing the fraud probes. The third and fourth leaks included José Sarney, Brazil's president from 1985 to 1990, and interim President Temer's transparency minister, Fabiano Silveira, involved in a similar conversation. President Rousseff was suspended from office for up to 180 days on May 12th after a 55-22 Senate vote to hold an impeachment trial on allegations that she manipulated government accounts to disguise a budget shortfall. Vice President Michel Temer was installed as interim president upon her suspension and has since moved swiftly to roll out an aggressive austerity plan for the country. If the Senate, under the supervision of the Supreme Court, ultimately decides to impeach Rousseff with a two-thirds majority vote after the trial, Temer will be installed as president until the next presidential election in 2018. Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton delivered a speech Thursday in San Diego on foreign policy, claiming that a Trump presidency would weaken U.S. alliances and embolden enemies. The former Secretary of State focused on comments Trump has made about rethinking U.S. support of NATO and his proposal to allow Japan, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia to provide their own nuclear defense.
Now, Moscow and Beijing are deeply envious of our alliances around the world because they have nothing to match them. They'd love for us to elect a president who would jeopardize that source of strength. If Donald gets his way, they'll be celebrating in the Kremlin. We cannot let that happen.
Trump has also ridiculed the bipartisan consensus on permanent war. The former Secretary of State invoked her experience in that office to make the case that Trump does not have the temperament to conduct U.S. foreign policy.
He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
Clinton herself has faced such accusations, particularly since she was recorded celebrating the killing of former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi in October of 2011, when she told the CBS reporter in the studio with videotape rolling,
"We came, we saw, he died."
Clinton and Trump are the subjects of this week's Freedom Rider column at blackagendareport.com by Margaret Kimberly, which examines the effort by Clinton supporters to paint Trump as a fascist and to garner support behind the former Secretary of State to stop him. We spoke with her via Skype early Thursday.
The person being labeled a fascist is Donald Trump, because of bad manners than anything else. Substantively, his pledge to send all undocumented people out of the country, his remarks about the building a wall against between the U.S. and Mexico. Excuse me, we already have one, but at any rate, he apparently is not big enough for him. Build a wall between U.S. and Mexico and make Mexico pay for it and ban Muslims from coming into the country. Those are racist, particularly banning Muslims coming into the country, but it is not fascist. Fascism, there are a variety of definitions for fascism, but we think of it as dictatorship, as a totalitarian right-wing dictatorship, loss of human rights, aggressive foreign policies. But that pretty much describes the United States anyway, under all presidents from the 70s onward. Some of them even further back were fascist. A friend of mine, Omali Yeshitela from the Black is Back Coalition, says fascism is when white people fear they're going to be treated the way black people are always treated. So it's not clear what people mean by fascist. If they mean that Trump is racist, they should say that Trump is racist. I think that is far more accurate. If you look at his policies, though, such as they are from such an unpredictable person, if you look at his policies, in some ways he's to the left of the Democrats. He says he won't touch Social Security. Right. I don't know how many people remember in Obama's first debate with Mitt Romney, when Romney clearly won, the first question was about Social Security, and Obama said, well, I'm sure that Governor Romney and I agree about Social Security. And I'm like, I thought we voted for Democrats to protect Social Security. Right. And he declared on national television that he felt the same way as a Republican. Trump says he'd raise the minimum wage. The mass protests about the minimum wage and the fight for 15 have forced the Democrats to claim they want to raise the minimum wage. But when they had the chance to do it in 2009, when they controlled Congress and the presidency, they raised the minimum wage only 70 cents. So that's not something that really matters to them. Yeah. On the issue of foreign policy, the United States is thoroughly imperialistic. The continued Bush was pilloried, and rightly so, for using U.S. troops to invade Iraq. Obama wages war by other means. He hasn't sent U.S. troops, but he did take troops out of Iraq. He took out some, according to an agreement that Bush himself had signed, some out of Afghanistan, but it's not a complete withdrawal of forces. He has used the jihadist network, and this is something that began under Jimmy Carter, using, Osama bin Laden was a friend of the United States. The Taliban were friends of the United States because they were used to drive the Soviets out who had been invited in by the government, the then government in Afghanistan. They had been invited in under international law properly into the country. But that was where it all began, of using jihadists as America's foot soldiers. And that continues. It happened in Libya with disastrous consequences. It's happening now in Syria. So, and in domestically, we have the biggest prison population in the world, 2 million people. Half of those people are black. Something like a quarter of all prisoners on the planet are black Americans. The prison system, mass incarceration, police brutality is our own fascist system within this country that we love to call a democracy. So when people talk about Trump being a fascist, what they're really saying is Trump doesn't have the polish, the good manners. He's a boorish, graceless version of every other president we've ever had.
Your article says it's a Democratic president who brought back a Cold War against Russia and recklessly brought troops to the edge of that country's borders. And even today, it looks like Hillary Clinton is running against Trump on this. The New York Times, it was cute this morning, by the way. The New York Times first had a headline that said Trump's reckless foreign policy was going to be the target of Clinton. And the lead that went with it was very interesting because they essentially laid out language from, like, Harry Truman, Cold War. And, you know, at this point, we already have all these war games going on along the borders of Russia and China, from Korea to the Baltics. You know, the war games that have German troops on Russia's border, which is a pretty scary thought for people, you know, that lost almost 30 million people in World War II. Hillary Clinton was one of the architects of that, and in fact, her husband's administration began this entire move of NATO to Russia's borders.
Yes, this all started in the early 90s when the Soviet Union fell, Gorbachev, the last president of the Soviet Union, was promised by the first Bush administration that NATO would not add any countries that are currently in Eastern Europe. Well, now fast forward, and almost every Eastern European country is a member of NATO.
Right.
So Russia is quite literally surrounded by NATO nations. Russia has not moved against. We constantly hear about Russian aggression. The United States instigated a coup in Ukraine, right on Russia's border. And I would love to have seen the reaction if Vladimir Putin instigated a coup in Mexico on America's border, how Americans would feel about that.
Right.
In reaction, he annexed Crimea and didn't kill anybody. So I always say his human rights record is better than that of the NYPD. But we constantly hear lies about Russian aggression when there is none at all. Russia has no reason to attack the Baltic states. We have this very reckless decision to send, as you said, German troops onto Russia's borders, and the European nations and the other NATO nations just sheepishly follow the dictates of the United States. We have spy planes that are coming close to commercial airliners. There have been near misses of a variety. Nuclear weapons. Russia is a nuclear power. China is a nuclear power. And by threatening them, we're doing the same thing in the South China Sea. We are instigating other countries that border China into military agreements and agreeing to take troops, the Philippines and Vietnam. Obama was just in Vietnam as part of his worldwide imperialism tour before he leaves office. So this is all very dangerous. It is very provocative. It's the United States that's provocative. And the propaganda campaign, particularly against Russia, has been horrendous. If you read the New York Times or the Washington Post every day, you don't know anything about Russia. Everything you read is a lie. And these are, if this isn't fascist, I don't know what is. So here we have the world's largest military power provoking the second largest military power needlessly. Well, actually, there is a need if you want the United States to control the world. So you can't say it's not happening for a reason. It's just not happening for a good reason. So I don't know where Trump makes anything more fascist than it already is. We will have a president we could make fun of, a man who would be a figure of fun with his obtuse language and his bad manners and his misogyny. He'd be someone you could make fun of, but he would not, in fact, be any more fascist than the ones than the people we have now. And Hillary Clinton would be particularly dangerous in foreign policy. She would put the world at the at risk of world war if Obama doesn't do it himself before he leaves office. She's particularly bloodthirsty. So she, in the area of foreign policy, is far more dangerous than Donald Trump, who questions the entire imperial project. He says, why do we make Russia an enemy? Why are we spending so much in NATO? So if there are fascists in Washington, I think they're already there. We don't have to look at Donald Trump.
Yeah, and he also has questioned he's actually pointed to the absurdity of the idea of permanent war. He invoked both General George Patton and Douglas MacArthur, saying, what would they think of the idea of permanent war?
Well, yeah, and, you know, this is why the neocons hate him and love Hillary. He has, it's an interesting phenomenon. He is the only one of the presidential candidates from either party who's questioned foreign policy at all. And this has been the premise now for decades, that we have to permanently, our country has to permanently be at war, that the United States has the right to invade any country it wants, has the right to decide who runs Libya or who runs Syria, or we can keep bombing Somalia and actively prevent that country from recovering from decades of war. That an American president can tell us that an individual is a danger to the United States and assassinate that person. In Somalia, we were told there was a terrorist graduation ceremony. I could not believe they actually used those words. It seemed pretty fascistic to me. And kill 150 people. And we were just told, well, you know, they were all terrorists, so don't worry your pretty little heads about it. I don't know how you can get much more fascist than that. I mean, you can, actually. You know, you could get to an actual unelected dictatorship, but we have this illusion of democracy in our country.
You know, your article does some fact-based comparisons, and taking, for example, Trump's rhetorical call to stop Muslims from coming into the country until they can be properly vetted, quote-unquote, whatever the hell that means. Mm-hmm. But there are many people already from the Muslim world that couldn't come here for sanctuary from wars that the United States is heavily involved in. You have to be from the right side. They also look at the wall and his immigrant bashing rhetoric as indications of fascism. But you point to President Obama being the deporter in chief, a policy that began under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah, he has deported, you know, Trump may be the one who talks about building a wall with Mexico and sending all undocumented people back to their home countries. But it's Obama who has deported more people than any other president. He's been pretty ruthless in using ICE, the immigration agency. And that's fascistic, by the way. You know, words like Homeland Security and this acronym ICE for immigration. Words are important. They do have meaning. But he's deported more people than any other president. So he may pretend to be the more inclusive person, as the Democratic Party generally does, but he has been no friend of immigrants, most of whom now are Latino, but from all over the world. So I you know, but Obama speaks better. He's more, you know, congenial and photogenic and smooth talker. So no one, people have to really pay attention. And the corporate media, of course, defend him and protect him. So you have to really pay attention to know that he's had the more anti-Latino policy. And Trump really wouldn't change very much and probably can't build a bigger wall along the Mexican border anyway. And no, he can't force Mexico to pay for it. You know, and Trump's barely concealed racism is what resonates with people. And I'm not going to say that I first started thinking about writing. There have been many anti-Trump protests, and I'm not going to say people shouldn't protest Trump. Someone like that who makes these blatant racist appeals is very dangerous. And as a black person, it is frightening to me to see, you know, this redneckism unleashed. However, we have to look at what we already have and ask ourselves, shouldn't that have been protested? These same people could have been protesting Obama's immigration policy, protesting his war policies, protesting his bailouts of the financial services industry. I'm sure I'm missing things, but I could go on and on and on. We have a political system that gives us these very dangerous people time after time after time. And Trump should not be the lightning rod that wakes us up from our slumber to show us how bad our political system is and how little it represents our desires and our needs.
You know, the same phenomenon that's kicking up around Trump in terms of organizing against him and the perceived threat there and the real threat there, too. It was done in reverse with the election of President Obama. I mean, you said, for example, about people could have been protesting Obama's immigration policy. There were people that were protesting it. The people that were directly affected were protesting it, but they didn't have all of the allies and Democratic Party operatives standing next to them at the time like they do now. The anti-war movement, a number of things, anti-racist movements, they all deconstructed mm-hmm. in 2009, sat on yeah. their hands January 20th, 2009, been sitting on their hands in the main with some notable exceptions, and even where they have you know, expressed themselves, like through Occupy Wall Street, for example, actual operations by the government against them.
Yes, you are correct. There have been many protests against Obama's immigration policy, but those, as you said, those people were alone. In general, Obama has been protected by progressives in a way that no Republican president would have been. So he can deport people, and some Latinos can protest, but everyone else ignores it. The anti-war movement just dissipated once he was elected. He marketed himself as an anti-war candidate, which he never was. He never said, I'm only against dumb wars, you know, which right. meant he wasn't going to send U.S. troops abroad and raise the ire of the public. But he has created more wars than Bush did. So Trump says he doesn't want to admit refugees from Syria, but Obama's policies created Syrian refugees. Right. If the United States hadn't decided to attempt an overthrow of Assad, all those Syrians would be in their home country. So, we're seeing it again with Trump, the same people who will protest Republican policies are silent when a Democrat does the same thing. And Trump is such an obvious target. People will speak out against him, whereas they give a Democrat like Obama a pass. Mm.
You know, back to this New York Times piece this morning, the lead was very interesting to me. In a speech on Thursday, Hillary Clinton plans to suggest that a potential Trump presidency would weaken U.S. alliances and embolden enemies. I mean, those are exactly the points of NATO and the permanent war. Mm-hmm. The anti-war movement is organizing to protest Trump and Clinton. I've seen some moves towards that. But the troops on the ground seem to be, at least the ones carrying signs, seem to be focused against Trump. And I'm wondering if that's the anti-war movement there or Democrats who are ready to join the anti-war movement again if Trump's elected.
You know, it's hard to say. People are protesting Trump for a variety of reasons. The other reasons I mentioned, but if Trump weakens alliances, that's a good thing.
Yeah, right.
I hope he does.
Yeah, right.
America's alliances have been disastrous for millions of people all over the world. I hope NATO becomes weaker. We don't need NATO. There's no need for NATO. NATO existed in opposition to the Soviet Union. Once the Soviet Union disappeared, you didn't need NATO. But it's just being used to move against Russia and China. So I hope he does. We need a president to weaken the alliances we already have, because the alliances are destroying the planet and currently putting us at risk of nuclear war. So she's right about Trump, but I say right on. And I hope that people can somehow measure their protest. I think it's more important for the left, frankly, to protest the Democratic convention than the Republican convention, and to let progressives know that we have to, I've said many times, it's time for the Democratic Party to actively be destroyed. It just needs to go. It does nothing for us domestically. It risks even more, created many wars, killed millions of people, destroying country after country. There's no value whatever to the Democratic Party. It's Trump who said last week, he said, in a couple of decades, the Republican Party will be the workers' party, the
right.
working people's party. Isn't that supposed to be a line from a Democrat?
Right.
So hopefully people will finally see the need to ditch the Democratic Party once and for all. And even someone like Bernie Sanders has already capitulated. He wants to change the Democratic Party from within, which is a losing proposition. People have said he should work with Jill Stein. Jill Stein has said in a Black Agenda Report interview that she has been trying to work with Bernie Sanders for 5 years, and he won't even return her calls or emails. So we're stuck with a Democratic Party, which is doing great damage to our country and to the world. And we need to, progressive people need to just stop voting for them.
And finally, you close saying that in just the last 40 years, American presidents, and that means Democrats and Republicans, and their allies have killed people in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Congo, Somalia, Haiti, Grenada, Gaza, Kosovo, Serbia, Sudan, Syria, Libya, and Yemen. And that's not even a complete list.
I know. But, I missed some. Anyway,
Cote d'Ivoire, a bunch of others. Of course, Honduras and those places. And said, what do they have to do to be called fascists? And you say there's already fascism in the White House, the Justice Department. Let's look at what has been the action from the Justice Department, for example, with Black Lives Matter, with the murder of Black people on the street, and Congress. So how do you differentiate the policies that exist now from the claim of fascism with Trump? And more importantly, with respect to foreign policy, Trump has opened up space for Sanders to differentiate himself significantly from Clinton on foreign policy in a material way. Is he not doing that because he thinks the calculus among Democratic voters doesn't allow him to be anti-war, that Democratic voters are not at the core anti-war?
Sanders, I believe, never really wanted the nomination. His foreign policy is not that much different. He differs only in domestic policy. He is a liberal Democrat of the old school, but he doesn't really want, I don't believe, really wants to win, and I think that explains his reticence to attack her on a variety of issues, including foreign policy.
Margaret Kimberly pens a weekly column at BlackAgendaReport.com entitled Freedom Rider. Thank you very much. A pleasure as always.
Thank you, Doug.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.